Okay, let's resume. The next item on our agenda is 2009-2010, number 93, rents on private property. Let's hear from proponents first. Sir, if you'll introduce yourself for the record, please.
Hi, I'm Robert Jeffrey Halpape. I go by Jeff.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm here for the proponents.
Thank you. Any questions from the board for Mr. Halpape concerning the measure? If not, then I'll turn to the question of whether the measure is a single subject. I don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Is there anybody who wishes to testify on the measure's compliance with the single subject requirement? Seeing none, then I'll turn to board discussion. Ms. Eubanks?
I believe the measure constitutes a single subject, and I move that the title board proceed to set a title.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft, and Ms. Gomez will display it on the screen in the room. Mr. Halpape, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
I think it's perfect the way it is. I like it.
Okay, thank you. Discussion by the board. Ms. Eubanks?
And while if the proponents are okay with the language, I'm a little concerned about the statement of the single subject, just because it's sort of lengthy. I was wondering if it might be condensed to something along the lines of an amendment to the Colorado Constitution prohibiting government rent controls on private property. A few less words and maybe a little clearer.
But you didn't, you want to put an ing word there instead of concerning a subject?
Well, I can say concerning a prohibition against, but.
Yeah.
Either way you want to do it, but it just seemed like maybe we could cut down a little bit in terms of the statement of the single subject.
So if we were to leave the words concerning a prohibition against, then.
It would be. Concerning a prohibition against government rent controls on private property.
That's fine with me.
What about against government control of rents on private properties? Well, I guess I'm okay with either way. I just rent control.
I'm fine with that too.
I think that adds one more word to your version. Either one's fine.
Ms. Eubanks?
So I think the language we would want to strike on line one, the very last the. And then on line two, strike control by government entities of. And insert. Government controls, I think, on.
I would just put an of right there.
Government control of rents,
yeah,
on private property. Okay.
And then my only other suggestion or question was whether we need the language about the indemnification and attorney's fees or whether we could end it on line six. I'm okay either way.
Want me to move this change first?
Why don't you go ahead and move this change then?
So moved.
I'll second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. And Mr. Domenico, you were referring to line?
Everything after property on line six is about indemnification and attorney's fees, which I know is important from the way this would play out, but I'm not sure is typically the kind of thing we include in a title, and it adds quite a few words that I don't know are material to a lot of voters.
I could support that. Mr. Halpape, do you have any comment about that, if we were to delete
everything?
Everything
sounds great.
If we were to remove all the indemnification language, you'd be okay with that?
That's great.
All right. I'm going to move that then, that we end the title after the word property on line 6 and strike everything that follows.
I'll second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
In the remaining phrase of the title, I think there's a little duplicative language in terms of you're already stating that, you know, these government entities are prohibited from controlling rents by any means, and we spell it out, but then we go on to say those means that attempt to control rents on private property. So I would suggest moving the language after legal restriction, so strike that attempts to control rents on private property. Yeah. So the period would be after restriction. I would move that change.
Second. Comment, Mr. Halpape?
That's great.
You're okay with that? Then all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Other changes to the staff draft? If not, is there a motion?
I move that we adopt the staff draft as amended.
Second.
Further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0, and that concludes action on number 93. The time is 10:09 a.m. Let's move on to number 94. And Mr. Halpape, I think you're probably representing proponents.
Yes,
on
I
that
am.
One as well. Any questions for proponents on number 94?
I like the staff draft.
Okay. Ms. Eubanks.
If I could, just I want to make sure that I'm understanding the emphasis of the measure in terms of we're dealing with only existing structures. So this measure is not affecting energy efficient building codes on new structures. Am I reading it
on
correctly?
On private property, on new structures. Yeah, right.
Right.
So municipalities can go ahead and enforce that for new building.
So this measure is only dealing with existing structures.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Except with respect to the rental license, I think. Because you can have rental licenses exist both on, well, so it deals, yes, primarily with existing structures on private property.
Any other questions? If not, then let's turn to the question of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. Ms. Eubanks?
I believe the measure constitutes a single subject, and I move that the title board proceed to set a title.
I'll second. Before I call for a vote, is anybody who wishes to testify on that question? Seeing none, then all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then Ms. Gomez is displaying on the screen in the room the staff draft. And Mr. Halpape, you said you're fine with it. Any discussion by the board? Ms. Eubanks?
I'm not sure that I think that the statement of the single subject is a correct description of the single subject. And maybe this goes to my question about you know, it seems like we're dealing with existing structures, but perhaps with the rental license provision, it's not limited to existing structures. I'm not... I mean, the single subject talks about existing structures, but if the rental provision deals with, could be new or existing, although I don't know how you have a rental license yet on something that doesn't already exist, but if it was newly constructed, I guess maybe it complied with an energy efficient building code. But just, it seems that the statement of the single subject isn't quite broad enough to cover.
Can we just leave it as a subject by getting rid of the prohibition language in the statement of the subject, say it's concerning the enforcement or even just concerning the application or something of energy efficient building codes and in connection therewith, and then leave the description of what it actually does to the part of the title that's supposed to talk about what it actually does.
Good with that.
So, Mr. Domenico, it would read concerning, would you leave enforcement, the enforcement of energy?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could either just say energy efficient building codes is what it's about, or the enforcement is also what it's about, and just depends how broad you want to make it. But you get rid of the language about a prohibition, and you get rid of the language about existing structures. This is about building codes, and then you put in the details later. So I would move delete a prohibition against, and then I would also delete on an existing structure located on private property. And then we'd have to add some of the detail. Actually, I think most of those details actually are already in the rest of the draft.
Should it be code plural, perhaps, yeah, and drop the "and"? So it's the enforcement of energy efficient building codes?
Yes. I think that's right.
So then the title would read concerning the enforcement of energy efficient building codes. Mm-hmm. That's your motion, Mr.?
That's my motion, yes.
I'll second that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. The motion carries 3-0. Further changes to the staff draft? Ms. Eubanks?
Similar to what we did on the last measure, should we drop the indemnification provisions? So pretty much strike the language at the end of line 7 through the end on line 10? I would so move.
Second. You're okay with that, Mr. Halpin?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
I think now, because there's two phrases after in connection therewith, there needs to be an "and" on line 6 after the semicolon. So moved.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further changes to the staff draft? Is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
So moved. Second.
Moved by Ms. Eubanks, seconded by Mr. Domenico. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. No. That motion carries 3-0. That completes action on number 94, and the time is 10:17.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's go to the next agenda item, which is 2009-2010, number 57, utility exemption from renewable energy. And Mr. Gessler, are you representing proponents on this one?
Yes, sir, I am. And Mr. Hobbs, it may make sense for me to address both 57 and 58 in conjunction because there's obviously a lot of similarities, but I'm happy to proceed as at the board's preference.
Sorry, you were saying address 57 and 58 together? That's fine. Well, so let's have some discussion. We'll do the discussion of the two of those at the same time. We'll take action separately. But so go ahead.
Okay. 57 and 58 are very similar. The proponents will only be using will only be circulating and submitting one of the ballot initiatives. So to the extent that the titles are similar, we can sort of give you the assurance that there won't be two of those on the ballot. Basically, what these do is they allow customers to exempt a utility from certain energy mandates that were enacted by initiative several years ago. This is a statutory change. It's not a constitutional change. And to a great extent, it basically what happened is there was an initiative mandating certain types of energy. That initiative allowed certain types of utilities to exempt themselves. The legislature removed that exemption. This adds that exemption back, and it expands what that old exemption was. So in other words, the old exemption only allowed to certain, for example, cooperative associations. This one applies it to municipally owned utilities or what the statute defines as qualified utilities. So basically, that's what it does. The difference between 57 and 58, 58, and sort of keeping with the idea that customers should be able to exempt the utility from those mandates, there is some concern that the Public Utilities Commission may nonetheless informally impose those mandates through its regulatory process, even though it's no longer in statute. So what 58 says is that if a utility exempts itself from this entire statutory scheme, the commission may not use any of the considerations in that statutory scheme as part of their decision-making or regulatory allowance. If, however, the utility only exempts itself from a part of the statutory scheme, then the commission and what we say is, shall not do anything inconsistent, because no one can exactly predict what a partial exemption may or may not look like. So it's sort of molded to what the exemption would look like here. So that's basically what it does. It creates a couple broad outlines for the petition requirements, for how the elections are conducted, sort of the some of the nuts and bolts, not extensive nuts and bolts, but some of the nuts and bolts of how that the election should be can be called, how it should be conducted. And then, of course, the results of it as well. So that's sort of in a nutshell what 57 does and what 58 does.
Are there questions of Mr. Gessler about 57 or 58? Ms. Eubanks.
Mr. Gessler, in terms of, number 58, is the language that appears at the end of subsection 1, it's related to the provision in subsection 7, which is pretty much the distinction between 57 and 58?
Yeah, the associated standards language.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And, in fact, you'll notice that 57, we removed that language.
Right. Oh, and the draft?
Okay. Yeah, because there was a question, what were those associated standards? Well, 57 doesn't contain those associated standards. 58 does contain the associated standards, and they directly refer to the final subsection. And those are the standards used by the Public Utility Commission.
Okay. Then in both measures, there's a reference to any qualifying retail utility as defined in 42.128. Well, these measures create 42.128, and I didn't see a definition of qualifying retail utility. Am I missing something?
It's in the previous section, 40-2-124. That's a typographical error.
Okay. So in terms of the statute where they're right, exempting themselves from those requirements.
Yeah. So I would ask the board to make that typographical error change.
And then my last question is, I didn't see a standard for the vote. I mean, whether it's majority, two-thirds, in terms of the level of votes necessary for the customers or consumers to exempt the utility out from the standards?
It's actually in the very first section. It says, by the affirmative vote of a
Majority
of
okay.
the customers
Great.
Or members casting ballots.
Okay. I was looking in all the other details. I didn't see it there. Thank you.
Yeah, I sort of put it up at the beginning. So, yeah, I would, and I thank you for catching that for that typographical error. I would ask that the board exercise its authority and allow us to make that change, because it is intended to refer to 124, not 128.
And that's in the subsection 1 in both measures, the reference?
Yes, it is.
And we have some authority under the case law to make non-substantive changes where the error is apparent on its face. We don't want to be changing the meaning of a measure.
Right.
So this may fit under that.
Yeah, and I believe it does, and I know because I've been on the other side. Tried to catch him on an error along those lines, I think, a few years ago. Qualifying retail utility is specifically defined in Section 124. So I think it's obvious that we're referring to a pre-existing, or I should say an existing, definition.
Okay. I think I'm going to come back to that instead of taking a motion right now, because I want to see if anybody else wishes to testify on that question. But we're still at the stage of questions of proponents. So are there any other questions for proponents? Then let's turn to the question of whether these two measures comply with a single subject requirement. I think we can have a discussion about both of them together, even though any motions I think would have to be, I'd like to have them made separately. Mr. Gessler, how would you express the single subject of each of these measures?
I think the subject is allowing the customers or members of a utility to exempt that utility from the standards, or the mandates, in 40-2-124.
Okay.
And either all or part of those mandates. It's up to the utility customers or members' choices.
Thank you. Is there anyone who wishes to testify that either of these measures does not comply with the single subject requirement? Mr. Ramey, or whichever. Whoever wants to go first.
I'll be very brief. We have no problem with 57. 58 obviously has the imposition on the discretion of the Public Utilities Commission in it, which was the matter discussed a few moments ago. I would submit, I'm assuming that the reason we have two initiatives is there's some concern in everybody's behalf that provision may constitute a separate subject, and I would just submit that that's something that we should consider. While obviously there's a relation to the subject matter, subparagraph or subsection 7 does is alter the jurisdiction. Not the jurisdiction, but the discretion of the factors that may be considered by the Public Utilities Commission. I'm assuming, though the measure doesn't say, in the context of issuance of certificates of public convenience and necessity. That's a somewhat different matter, even though it is related to limiting the discretion based upon the action taken by the initiative itself. I would think that's certainly not necessary. Proper. Probably not. If the discretion of the PUC is going to be affected in some way, probably should be done. 57 without that measure is fine on single subject.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Ramey? Ms. Eubanks?
Mr. Ramey, is it fair to say that under current law that the PUC takes under consideration in terms of acquisition of making determinations regarding acquisition of additional generation or energy resources, whether or not a utility is complying with the renewable energy standards that are currently set forth in 42.124?
Actually, I don't know. I know nothing that prohibits. I mean, okay. I know nothing that prohibits them from doing that. And obviously, there is concern on the proponents' part that they can and are likely to do so. I'm not an expert on what the Public Utilities Commission can and cannot consider. I'm aware of very few restrictions upon the factors that they may consider. This would certainly appear to be a logical one, and the proponents are obviously concerned with that.
Thank you.
But
I might ask Mr. Gessler.
I was going to suggest. I mean that.
Okay.
I assume that provision wouldn't be in here, and that may be a question more appropriately directed.
Okay. Thank you.
Before we get back to you, Mr. Gessler, let me see if there's other testimony against either of these measures complying with the single subject requirement. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Craig Johnson. I'm with Fairfield and Woods, and I'm representing the Colorado Association of Municipal Utilities. Let me just first go on the record by saying that this is not a measure that's supported by KMU. And we think that it's unnecessary because there's only two municipalities that are affected by this statute, and both of them have, in essence, opted in by adopting measures to comply with the renewable energy standards. However, as far as the single subject requirement goes, I think there's really at least two discrete subjects that are addressed here. One is the stated intent of allowing the customers of utilities to opt out, but there's another, I think, broader area that's covered by this, and that's basically creating a new body of election law. The Section 2, and this applies to both 57 and 58, allows the qualifying utility through its board to set an election. And that creates a unique situation in the case of municipals, because municipals have a governing body that reports to the city council or the governing body of the city. It's the city that has the authority to set elections and to establish the procedures governing elections. A utilities board acting on its own currently has no authority to establish or to set an election or to determine the conduct of that election. So this is really a separate issue that's discrete and independent of the initial stated purpose of simply allowing utilities to, or their customers to opt out of the requirements of the statute. So that's basically the only objection that we have. I think we would probably join in the concern with respect to 58 about the expanded areas of authority for the PUC as well.
Questions for Mr. Johnson? Okay, thank you. Before I return to proponents, is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the question of single subject compliance? Yes, sir. Come forward, please.
My name is John Golden Dubois, and I wanted to actually posit that there are three subjects within this, the two that the previous gentleman mentioned, and then the third, obviously, is to limit the authority of the Public Utilities Commission, which would be a completely separate subject as well.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Golden Dubois? And I don't think I have you on the sign-up sheet. Would you mind on this? I don't think I have you.
I'm on there.
Oh, are you? Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I should have been looking more carefully. Thank you. Anybody else? Mr. Singer.
So I have a question about the ballot title, but I assume that's coming up.
That we'll get to that. Yes, sir. Okay, Mr. Gessler, would you like to respond to the discussion about single subject compliance?
Certainly. With respect to Mr. Ramey's comment, or I should say Ms. Eubank's question, our understanding is that, yes, the public utility does take these sort of types of mandates into its consideration through its regulatory or discretionary process when making decisions. And we think I would ask the board not infer anything by the existence of, or any legal conclusion or legal admission by the existence of two initiatives. But I think the reason why that part, the proponents are probably going to think that one's necessary is because, look, if you want to allow customers to opt out of these standards, that opt-out is meaningless if those standards are nonetheless imposed through some discretionary or informal process through the Public Utility Commission. So there's a necessary connection between the ability of customers and members to opt out of something like that because their opt-out is could essentially be rendered meaningless through the regulatory action. So I think that's absolutely necessary to fulfill the purposes of this initiative. With respect to creating a new body of election law, I guess I would disagree with that. If anything, as described, it simply reaffirms an existing body of election law. I mean, if in fact certain municipal utilities are governed by the city council, if that's the way they're structured, the city council already has the power, I think, through the referendum process to call certain elections. Certainly home rule cities do. So it would not be creating anything new. And I think that also assumes that there's no way in the future that any municipality could ever set up it assumes that every municipal utility in the future will always be set up in the same fashion. And then also with respect to the single subject standards, again, it's necessary. If we're going to allow customers, a customer, whether they're a customer of a co-op or a customer of Excel or a customer of a municipal utility, they're still a customer statewide, and they should have the opportunity to be able to opt out. And so it's sort of necessary to, it's necessarily connected to the subject of this title, or of this initiative, I should say. With respect to the third subject, limiting the authority of the PUC, I think, frankly, that's the same as the first one. Unless the board disagrees with me, I think I've already addressed that.
Domenico.
Do you agree with the statement that there are only two utilities affected by this?
I don't have the knowledge, so I don't know whether there are only two. But I would also point out that, a statute is not merely reactive, although it can sometimes be viewed that way, but it's prospective as well. And, future municipalities may want to set up their own utilities. So the fact that there is two as of, April 21st, 2010, is frankly sort of irrelevant.
Okay, thank you. If there's no other questions, then I'll turn to board discussion of the single subject issue. Any discussion by the board? Yes, sir. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, briefly.
There was a statement that was made that these municipal utilities are governed by the city council, and that's not the case. You have a separate utilities board. A utilities board would report to a city council. And there are two municipalities that are currently affected, Fort Collins and Colorado Springs. Both have a separate board that reports to the city council. Other municipalities that might come under the purview of the statute have a similar arrangement. So it's not true to say that the city council already has the authority to set these elections. The way this initiative is currently drafted, it creates a new authority in the governing body of the utility, and that's where the problem with the creation of a new body of election law arises.
Okay, thank you. Discussion by the board? Ms. Eubanks.
I think that the measure contains a single subject. I think that the election provisions are specific for the opt-out process, and I think it's reasonable in terms of having the provision in 58 dealing with limiting the PUC's ability to consider the fact that a utility has opted out of the standards for purposes of acquisition of additional generation or energy resources. I think it's all connected. It all seems to be related to opting out of the standards, and so I would move that the board find that there is a single subject and we proceed to set a title.
And I do agree with Ms. Eubanks' statements. Mr. Domenico?
Yeah, me too. I think it creates kind of an interesting election system, but it's not a separate subject. It doesn't apply that election system to anything but opting out, which is the subject. So
I'm convinced this is a single subject.
Ms. Eubanks?
And just procedurally, whether we need a separate motion on each measure?
I'd suggest maybe we just do 57 and for now.
I withdraw my previous motion, and in regard to number 57, I think that the measure contains a single subject, and I move that the title board proceed to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
And do you want me to go ahead and make my motion on 58?
Why don't you go ahead and do 58, okay. Then we'll come back to the staff draft on 57.
In regard to number 58, I believe that the measure contains a single subject, and I move that the title board proceed to set a title.
I'll second that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Okay, then let's go back to 57, the staff draft. Ms. Gomez will display the staff draft on the screen.
Mr. Hobbs, may I interrupt? I apologize.
Sure.
This may be the appropriate time with respect to the typographical error in the text of the initiative.
Thank you for reminding me about that. Before we do the staff draft, then Mr. Gessler has requested on behalf of proponents to make the what he said was a typographical change in the text of the measure. I'd like to find out if there's any opposition to that before there's any further discussion. Is there anyone in the room opposed to making that change? Then let's address that. And again, I think we probably ought to take separate motions. In 57, then I guess I'll go ahead and offer a motion that in line 3 of 40-2-128, that the reference to 40-2-128 be changed to 40-2-124.
Second.
Seconded by Ms. Eubanks, I think. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. And then I'll offer the same motion with respect to the text of number 58. Again, line 3 of the first section, change 128. That's my motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Domenico. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. No. That motion carries 3-0. Okay, then back to the staff draft for number 57. Mr. Gessler, do you have any comments about the staff draft?
Yes, I do. I think that the description of the single subject is incorrect. As I described it earlier, it's the... it's not really the ability of electric utilities to hold an election. It's the ability of customers or members of a utility to exempt the utility from certain mandates, certain energy mandates. My other comment, and I'll just sort of make generalized comments right now.
And how would you word that then?
I would probably word it concerning the ability of customers of electric utilities to exempt the utilities requirements of, and I'd have to think, eligible electric resource standards is a bit awkward, but I would have to think about that a little bit more. Perhaps okay. Electric resource mandates be a better way to, or certain. I know that's oftentimes the fallback for the board to say certain electrical mandates rather than describing all of them with particularity. I think also applying this exemption to probably a little over-particularization, saying qualifying electric utilities, cooperative electric associations, and municipally owned utilities, it would probably be better to say, you know, to certain utilities. Applying this exemption to customers of utilities or certain utilities, I think requiring an election upon recommendation of the utility boards of directors or governing body or upon the filing of a petition, I think that's fine. I think maybe just simply saying specifying procedures for conduct of the election is adequate rather than particularizing the quorum requirement and the mail ballot election requirements. So in general, I think my general comments are I think the single subject is incorrectly stated, and there's a fair amount of over-particularization within the ballot initiative that doesn't necessarily lead to a greater understanding.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Mr. Gessler? Thank you. Anyone else wish to testify on the titles? Mr. Singer. You'll identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Hobbs. I'm Kent Singer. I'm the executive director of the Colorado Rural Electric Association, and we are not a proponent of either 57 or 58. We are a group of utilities who would be impacted by this. The question came up as to whether or not there would just be a couple of utilities impacted. That's true for the municipal utilities, but with respect to electric cooperatives, this procedure would apply to all of the electric cooperatives because they are currently all required to meet a portfolio standard. And I had a couple of specific issues with the ballot title, and I think Mr. Gessler hit on one of them. In this language at the end of line 3, beginning of line 4, where it refers to qualifying electric utilities, the term used in the measure and in the statute is qualifying retail utilities, and that's the term I would recommend be used here. It's a term of art that has come about since Amendment 37 was passed in 2004. And it has significance in the utility world. Some utilities provide at retail, some provide at wholesale, some provide at both wholesale and retail. Not all utilities are the same with respect to wholesale or retail. So I would suggest that that term be qualifying retail utilities. That's the term used in the measure. And then secondly, on line 5, the proposed draft talks about requiring an election upon the recommendation of the board of directors or governing body. And I would instead say the action. I think what's required is more than a recommendation. What's required is actually the passage of a resolution or a motion, which is an action of the board or the governing body. So those are the two changes I would like to see in the proposed staff draft.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Singer? Thank you very much. Anyone else? Mr. Ramey.
Is the board getting all these? We're throwing all sorts of suggestions at you. Two things. Number one, the term in line 2 going over into line 3, eligible electric resource standards. I'm not quite sure. I'm sure that comes from someplace. I'm not quite sure where it is. But if we're looking at the standards, the source of the standards, which is Amendment 37, which the statute, which corrected the site to before 40-2-124, these are referred to as renewable energy standards. So one suggestion we would make, just for the sake of clarity and public understanding, is to substitute Colorado's renewable energy standard for the words eligible electric resource standards.
Colorado's renewable energy standards?
Yes. I believe that is actually the statutory heading of 42-124. That's what those standards are generally known as, Colorado's Renewable Energy Standard. Secondly, and I'm a little hesitant about this, I'm going to throw this at the board and again, maybe see what you do with it. There's a lot of detail in terms in here, of course, of how the provision will be affected, and it's a general proposition that that sort of detail does not need to be included in the title, and I would wholly endorse that. There's one item in that detail, however, which stands out, and that is the provision regarding statements for and against the measure that can be made in the context of the election. Proponents are permitted to submit a statement of their own choice with a certain word limit to it advocating the measure. Opponents, however, are not permitted submit a statement in opposition other than simply to adopt the language, and in fact they're compelled to adopt the language from the blue book of the amendment that adopted this provision back in, I believe, 2004, and as I read it literally word for word. That suggests an issue which this board does not need to, and in fact should not consider today. The First Amendment issues both of restricting the speech of the opponents and compelling fact the speech of the opponents. That issue hangs out there for the future. Nevertheless, that is such an important, and obviously if adopted would become such a point of contention, I can guarantee the board that I'm going to suggest that at least that one detail should be referenced in the title, and the way that that would be done, it may sound like it would be a bit awkward, but I guess what I would suggest is if you go down to line 8. Nope, go up to 7. Specifying procedures for the conduct of the election. I would put something in there such as, comma, including an opportunity for proponents to present supporting statements and restricting the content of statements in opposition. Short and sweet. And the only reason to put that one item in is that it will loom inevitably large in terms of effectuation of this.
And getting the language you were suggesting was including an opportunity, if you could repeat that.
Sure. It's right after conduct of the election, including an opportunity for proponents to present supporting statements and restricting the content of statements.
Questions for Mr. Ramey? Ms. Eubanks?
Mr. Ramey, in terms of your comment about the way to describe the standards, and I'm looking at 40-2-124, and yes, the headnote says renewable energy standard, but amazingly, in this whole section, and I'm not terribly familiar with it, it's not an area of law that I work in.
Me neither.
It talks about eligible energy resources. It talks about renewable energy resources. It talks about recycled energy. And so although the headnote refers to renewable energy standard, I don't see much of anything that specifically, I mean, I don't know whether recycled energy is considered part of renewable energy. So it's interesting that the headnote has that terminology
right.
When it's not very apparent from the statute itself that...
I could not agree more, and you also, at least I wasn't able to find the term eligible electric resource standards. We have all sorts of terms floating around, so I'm going with the headnote because I think the headnote is what people understand that to be. That statute was itself, of course, an initiative.
Right.
Not drafted by the legislature. And the people, if there's any term that means anything to the electorate, it's renewable energy resource standard. So I absolutely agree with you. There doesn't seem to be a uniform term in the measure itself. I couldn't find one. I couldn't find the one that's in the proposed staff draft of the title.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Is anyone, Mr. Singer?
I hope I can shed some light on this. I can't extend this.
And you're right, there's a long history of this thing and why terms are used the way they are. I saw this in the proposed summary or the ballot title as well. Actually, I think it's probably accurate. I mean, the term eligible energy resources is defined in 1A of 42-124, and it picks up both recycled energy and renewable energy resources. So the phrase or the term eligible energy resources is what the statute uses to define what kinds of generation resources meet the portfolio standard requirements. So I actually think that term is probably accurately used. I will concede that maybe most people think about this in terms of a renewable energy standard, but I just wanted to add that for what it's worth.
Thank you. Anyone else before I return to proponents? Okay, then Mr. Gessler, comments about those suggestions?
Just very quickly, just in response to some of the comments, and I think renewable standards would be, I mean, it's incorrect and it's inaccurate. You know, and eligible electric resource standards is a little bit awkward. I think it would probably, and again, I mean, this is sort of what the board uses on a regular basis, certain electric resource standards. You know, certain is sort of the catch-all when things are just really awkward and difficult. And I think we're faced with sort of a situation here. Maybe I won't say awkward and difficult. With respect to the qualifying electric utilities versus qualifying retail electric utilities, I appreciate the explanation. and that will be very meaningful for all 24 people in the state who understand it. I exaggerate a little bit. But I do think that that sort of reinforces that maybe it may make sense to say, you know, certain electric utilities or specified electric utilities so that we don't get into that level of having to list all of these. I agree with Mr. Ramey that there's a lot of detail here. Before I comment on his thoughts with respect to the, the proponent statements and the opponent statements, I would want to see that language, because I think it's inaccurate to say that they don't have an opportunity to make statements, because that would indicate that they're sort of silenced in the public debate or something along those lines. So I would want to at least see what it looks like. And I'm not even sure that it's, you know, such a huge issue that it should be pointed out separately, maybe for the 6 First Amendment attorneys in the state who find this a looming issue and fascinating. And I'm, of course, teasing Mr. Ramey. But again, I'm not quite sure that that's a level of detail that adds much to this title itself. And I think I covered... And I'm sorry, the comment with respect to action as opposed to recommendation, we don't oppose that. I mean, I think that would be fine if that stays in there, which I think is appropriate. So I don't have a problem with action.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Gessler? Okay, thank you. Then I'll turn to board discussion of the staff draft for number 57. Are there any suggested changes, Ms. Eubanks?
Okay, well, might as well take a stab at it. In terms of the statement of single subject, I think my approach is simpler is better. And rather than get into whether it's, you know, members and customers and elections and all of that, I think in terms of the statement of single subject, we go along the lines of something like an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the exemption of electric utilities from eligible electric resource standards, I mean, as the general statement. And then we can get into all the details about who and how and all in the following phrases. But something along those lines for statement of single subject?
Sounds pretty good to me.
Well, I generally like going in that direction, but in this case, I'm a little concerned about removing the concept of a vote, or at least of the creation of a process by which entities can become exempt. Stating it as just concerning the exemption of them really sounds like you're exempting them.
Will be exempt.
By voting yes or no on this, you're exempting them. I mean, and it might, especially if you look at it in terms of the submission clause, it would really give that impression, I think, if it said, shall there be an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the exemption. So my suggestion was to say something like concerning the ability of customers of electric utilities or certain electric utilities to vote to become exempt from certain electric resource standards, I think. Something like that. I agree with, I think, everybody that this single subject statement needs to be rewritten. The other way you could do it would just be to say concerning a process by which electric utilities could become exempt. And then, I mean, I think we need to add a sentence. I think the rest of the title is kind of a mess. And what you need to do is add a sentence, describe in the, I don't know, the action part, what I call it, of the title, explaining the vote how the vote works and what it does, that there will be a vote of the customers. And most of what's in there, I think, is not necessary. What's in there currently is not helpful to your typical voter. It's lawyer. This is a title that's written for lawyers, and if we head the direction everybody's talking about, is gets more written for lawyers. This is supposed to be for voters, not lawyers. So it's material to voters, not material to lawyers. To me, what's important is you're creating a system, what I think voters would think is, that customers can vote to have their utility exempted. All this business about petition requirements and 20% or more of ballots and holding the election by mail, to me, is not material. Nor is the language about, Mr. Ramey's language about what each side can say in the petition. So it might be a little easier if we think about what's going to follow the single subject, and we could figure out what we need to put in there. I mean, if we're going to put all the details in the body of it, then maybe we can go to a really simple single subject statement. I don't know.
Ms. Eubanks.
And I'm not adverse in terms of going the direction that you suggest, Mr. Domenico, in terms of whether we say concerning elections to exempt electric utilities. I mean, in terms of that concept, if you think that's enough or you want more details up front. But and I'm in agreement, I think, in general with your statements of how much detail is really necessary in the remaining phrases of the title regarding election process and all of that. I don't know that, other than noticing that there are procedures established for calling and conducting the election, I don't know that we have to go much further than that. But it just, and I don't know, and maybe Mr. Singer can address this question, because I don't know. Because the measure talks about members or customers, and I assume members are significant to the co-op? Okay. And so I don't know if we just say customers in the title, whether that's an accurate statement.
My view is, and I don't know, not having ever been one, that people who are members of co-ops also consider themselves customers or understand that they would be included within customers. It's the kind of thing that I think could be clarified if it's necessary to clarify it. I mean, that is the kind of thing I think should be in the body of it, who's voting. So that's why I was comfortable with customers. Because, I mean, you could just say the subject is concerning a process by which utilities can become exempt from the requirements, and then you describe what the process is and the rest. That would address my concern with your original suggestion, which, by making it clear that just voting on this doesn't exempt everybody from it, but...
Although if the process is an election, to go ahead and say election might be fine, too. I mean, at least that gives a little bit more information.
It gives a little bit more information. I wonder if it's misleading information. I do think this is a... not what I would think of if I read something that said, hey, there's going to be we're voting on whether there'll be an election to exempt utilities. I would think of a typical election, not a kind of election of customers or members, is my only concern with that. I mean, I would be comfortable just saying this is a an amendment concerning whatever we figure out these standards should be called, and then leaving the details to later. I mean, that's what it's about. It's about these renewable eligible electric resource standards. If we write it that broadly, then I think we're okay there, but have to add more detail later.
Mr. Gessler?
If I could just make a couple comments. I think it may make sense just to use customers rather than customers and members, although I would, if Mr. Singer has any comments on that, I mean, if he thinks that, you know, members really think of themselves as fundamentally different than customers, I certainly think that's worthwhile to hear from the board, if there are any comments on that.
Well, no, I think they do.
I guess my question is, I mean, do the people, I mean, not the folks who read the statutes, but the people who sort of pay the, purchase the electricity and pay those bills, do they consider themselves customers as well as members? In other words, if they looked at this and they said, customers of electric utilities, that applies to me, or would they say to themselves, oh, I'm not a customer, I'm a member? My sense is they probably would say, yeah, that applies to me as well, from sort of the perspective of a voter.
Well, and at least as importantly, that's my view too, but it's obviously just sort of speculation. But more importantly, our job is kind of to speculate about what the typical voter or what most voters would think, and whether a handful of people would conclude, well, that doesn't apply to members of co-ops because they're members, not customers. I think that group is very, very small in terms of how many voters would not understand this to apply to co-ops, especially if we explain that in the next clause in the title.
So maybe, and I'll just throw this out for the single subject, I know the challenge isn't coming, rewriting it, but concerning the ability of customers to elect, perhaps using elect as a verb, to elect whether certain utilities or whether their utilities should be exempt from requirements from the eligible, instead of saying from the requirements of, basically exempt from eligible electric resource standards. Not many words there. I think it captures the idea of an election, of that process, of an exemption. The customers are voting upon that. Because I think to say that, you know, that customers are holding an election, because the customers can demand the election, or the utility can trigger the election, the utility board. So anyway, I would at least maybe throw that out on the table as a possibility.
Thank you. Ms. Eubanks?
Okay. I guess there's one option would be saying concerning a process to exempt electric utilities from eligible electric resource standards, or if we think that we need to include the concept of customers, say concerning a process for customers to exempt electric utilities from eligible electric resource standards as the statement of single subject.
I think we'd be fine with including the word customers in that. Generally not a big fan of the word process because it can mean so much. But I think if you add customers to it.
I'm happy to say election.
Well, election would probably be a little bit better, I think. But maybe election by customers.
Concerning elections for customers to exempt electric utilities from eligible electric resource standards. Along those lines. Do we put it up there and
see? Let's take a look at it.
Do we want to go process or elections?
I think I'm okay with either. And we might as well put election in there, and I think it's probably okay.
Okay. So, I don't know. I may just strike all that language where you are starting with the ability, after concerning, strike the language all the way through up to eligible electric resource standards. No, keep going. I want to keep eligible electric resource standards. So, yeah, strike that. And to replace it with elections for customers to exempt electric utilities from.
I think that's pretty good. I'm still not sure about eligible electric resource standards, but of the part that's been changed, I think I like that.
I'll move that change.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
I was just going to say on the terminology about the eligible electric resource standards, I don't know that we have the ability really to use anything else. I mean,
well, I was just thinking of certain statutory or just statutory electric resource standards. I agree that renewable is tempting, but probably not quite accurate.
And looking at 42.124, there is the term eligible energy resources, which is more than renewable.
Right.
So
I don't think we can use renewable.
Right.
I mean, eligible electric resource standards to me, and I assume to almost every voter, is essentially meaningless. I mean, that is a very, I mean, it's used in this statute that was adopted by initiative, but is that helpful to anyone? Any voter? I don't think so.
Or you want to take out eligible? And just have, we can put in certain or specified, but I don't know that that's terribly helpful. And so for purposes of single subject, just strike eligible, so it's
certain and whatever are weasel words.
I agree.
But they are helpful in the sense of if you care about what they are, they hint to you. You can look at the measure and figure it out if you care. So they're not helpful in the sense that they tell you what everything you need to know, but they tell you you can, if you care, to look at it. And so I don't like using them generally, but in what we're trying to do, I think it can be helpful.
Mr. Singer.
To your point, I think the point term,
yeah.
The term electric resource standards, I think, does make sense. In fact, what is being complied with are the electric resource standards. How you comply with them is by using eligible energy resources. When you look at the 3%, 5%, 10%, the actual standards themselves in 124.1C, it says, here are the electric resource standards. To me, that's the term that ought to be used, and I think that's what you're suggesting, is to strike the word eligible and just stick with electric resource standards. I think that would with the statute.
My only concern with that is whether there are other electric resource standards outside of 124, and if there are, then maybe we need to use our weasel word certain or specified, otherwise I'm fine striking eligible, because that is the word that throws me.
There are no other standards in law that apply to utilities for what their generation portfolio has to be comprised of.
Mr. Golden Dubois.
Thank you. I believe that the only thing that the proponents want to remove themselves from is from using renewable energy. And so, to be clear, I think that if I think one of the things that you said, Mr. Domenico, was that We're supposed to develop a title that the voters will understand. And one thing that is clear here in the state is that the voters do understand the renewable energy standard, and they can talk about it in the sense of what the standards are for utilities. It was just commonly referred to as the renewable energy standards in the state, and I believe that the only thing they want to remove themselves from is from the requirement that they use renewable energy. So I think that that's the clearest description of what it is they're trying to do.
Yeah, as I said, I was tempted to do that. That does seem what would be most helpful, except for the fact that, as Ms. Eubanks pointed out, whether they want to or not, the definitions in 124 include renewable and certain other resource standards. And that's why I kind of want to weasel a little bit by just saying certain or statutory or specified, I think. Or just get rid of that particular adjective and just go with electric resource standards.
Ms. Eubanks?
I would move that we strike eligible and replace it with specific.
If I may just weigh in as proponents, that would be great. I think that probably works fine. I mean, we've heard from a subject matter expert, I think, that made some good points. And I do think you need sort of specific or certain in this instance, because it's not like we're removing them from all standards that could ever exist.
I'll second the motion. Mr. Domenico?
Yeah, I'm not sure I think it's great exactly, but I think it's probably the best we can do. So,
okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
No, that motion carries 3-0. Further changes to the staff draft for number 57?
Well, just broadly, is there any support on the board for kind of getting rid of a lot of the detail and sort of starting over with the action part? I think for sure we now need to mention that there's a vote right up front after in connection therewith, that the way that there's a vote of customers or members. I think we should include or members there. And they can vote to remove themselves from these specified requirements. I don't like the language of applying this exemption. It just throws the whole thing off to me. But I would get rid of the requiring an election on the recommendation of the board or a petition, I think. I would get rid of the mail. That's all stuff that's material in the lawyer sense, but not in the voter sense, in my view.
Ms. Eubanks?
I'd be supportive of approach of pretty much gutting what is in the staff draft as it currently appears after in connection therewith and starting over.
Let's start over then. What's the best way to proceed?
I've got some language. We could at least throw it up there and then start playing with it if you want.
Sounds good.
Okay, so strike all that language. Then I would substitute, and this is just to start, authorizing members or customers of a qualifying retail utility to approve at an election the exemption of the approve at an election the exemption of the utility from certain energy resource standards. How about it?
I really like that. I want to make sure we're comfortable with qualified or qualifying retail utility. I don't know the terms of art well enough to know if that's everything we need. And I would just suggest that instead of approve at an election, say approve by majority vote. Would capture what I do think is a material fact about how it works.
Could I ask Mr. Gessler a question? And I don't know, there might be other folks that need to respond to this. I mean, I'm looking at the terminology of your measure about qualifying retail utility or a cooperative electric association or municipally owned utility. And then I'm also looking at 42.124. Talks about each provider of retail electric service in the state of Colorado other than municipally owned utilities that serve 40,000 customers or less shall be considered a qualifying retail utility. And then it goes on to accept cooperative electric associations that voted themselves out and municipally owned utility. I mean, are the co-ops or the municipally owned utilities separate categories from the qualifying retail utility? Are there three types, categories here?
I believe there are.
Okay.
And maybe one way to handle this, again, looking at it from the voter's perspective, maybe to say, you know, members are customers of, you know, certain retail utilities or cooperative associations.
Are there any electric utilities that aren't covered by, I mean, there may be some that aren't covered by 124. Are any possibly not covered by this?
I don't know for sure.
Okay.
Mr. Singer.
All electric co-ops that provide retail service are qualifying retail utilities under 124. We're going to get into this subject later, I'm afraid, on the second sentence of what 124.1 means. That sentence was added in Senate Bill 143 after Amendment 37 was adopted to say that co-ops and munis don't have to comply with the Commission's rules to implement Amendment 37, but they're still subject to the standards. That's kind of a separate issue, but the fact is all co-ops, except for Tri-State, which is a wholesale power supplier, all distribution co-ops are qualifying retail utilities. So you've picked up, and that's fine, that's what the measure does, you've picked up all the co-ops by referring to qualified retail utilities here, if that was the question.
So is the measure a little bit redundant then? Because it says qualifying retail utilities and also lists cooperative electric associations.
Yes, absolutely it is.
So
it
you're
didn't
mentioned
need to
twice.
Say that in my view,
okay.
Right.
But so is anybody who's not off the grid? Are there any customers of a utility in Colorado that, as far as you know, who aren't covered by this measure?
Well, if they're customers, they are covered. I think you're asking, are there people who aren't customers of utilities, which is certainly true.
Well, right. But I'm asking, are there people who are customers of what? Here's what I'm asking. If we just said members or customers of a utility, of an electric utility, would that be inaccurate?
That would not be what this measure applies to, because it only applies to what's going on in 124, which are retail utilities.
Well, it's not, but I don't think that's right, actually, because I think it applies to any qualifying retail utility as one listed group. And then it also lists cooperative electric association. Now, you said that that's within the same definition. And then it also applies to any municipally owned utility, whether or not they're a qualifying retail utility, as I read it. Now, if they're not a qualifying retail utility, maybe it doesn't matter because they aren't subject to the requirements of 124.
That's exactly right. The portfolio standard requirements only apply to retail utilities.
Right. That's right. So it would be sort of pointless. But as I read it, I mean, it was written. This is the way the measure was written. You could, I suppose, have a vote of your utility, even if it's not currently subject to 124. And under this measure, if this were to pass, you could say, look, we're not a qualifying retail utility. We're just a municipally owned utility, and therefore we're not covered by 124, but we want to have a vote anyway. And so my question is anybody, if we wrote customers of an electric utility or a retail electric utility, maybe would that cover what the measure does?
Well, I think the term, again, as I stated before, the term qualified retail utility is what's used in Amendment 37 in the statute. I think that has meaning. I understand that the layperson may not get that, and maybe that's what you're trying to get at. I mean, I don't think the scenario you posit is ever going to happen. There'd be no reason for Tri-State as a wholesale utility to have an election when they aren't subject to the requirements in the first place. I mean, I think what you've got there from the perspective of identifying who this applies to, I think that
so, yeah, let me add, that may have hit on what the problem with what I was saying. Tri-State is not a qualifying retail utility.
Correct.
It's not a cooperative electric.
No, it is a cooperative.
So it's actually technically covered by this, but they would never have a vote because they're not covered by 124.
Correct, exactly right.
So, I don't know. The reason I'm getting in on this is whether we can just say authorizing members or customers of an electric utility. Now, it may be pointless for a lot of customers or members, but as I read the measure, Tri-State is covered by this measure, even though it's not covered by 124. Because it's a cooperative electric association. It's probably not worth a big fight. The other way to do it, I don't think we can just leave it at qualified retail utilities because the measure lists other types of customers or members who can have this kind of vote if they want to, even if they don't need it. So you would either make it broader than it is now, or go back to the list as it was written before, qualifying retail electric utilities, cooperative electric associations, and municipally owned.
Ms. Max?
I don't really want to go back to the list. So what if we changed qualified retail to, and actually I guess we'd have to change the A, so we say members or customers of an electric utility? Whether that would be, or certain electric utilities, even though I think we might be covering the whole gamut of utilities, but if we take out a qualified retail and change it to an electric utility,
that, as far as I understand now, is correct. As far as the measure goes, and I think accurate and.
Now you had some other changes that you wanted to make.
Well, so then, I just wonder if there. I don't really have any more. I question whether anyone else thinks we need to add in some detail. You might want to use the specifying procedures for conduct of the election.
You suggest that we reference that it's by majority vote at an election?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I did.
To approve
I forgot about
by
that. Instead of approve at an election, just say approve by majority vote. And I guess you could leave in at an election, or maybe that's subsumed within the concept of a vote. So I would probably get rid of at an election myself.
Mr. Singer, why don't you come to the microphone so everybody can hear?
Just for purposes of consistency, on line 3 we say specific electric resource standards, so on line 5 I think it should say specific electric, not energy resource standards. Energy is a broader term, so I think it needs to say just the same term in both places.
So instead of energy, say electric?
If you want to go with specific electric resource standards, then I think it should be specific electric resource standards down there as well.
Okay. So if we change certain energy to specific...
Correct.
Electric.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Would there be any other changes?
You guys think we need the business about telling people that it has some detail about how the elections are conducted?
Deal with this phrase, and then I think I'm agreeable to adding an additional phrase, but however you want to proceed.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and vote on this one. I'll move that change.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then what other details would we want to add, Ms. Eubanks?
Then after standards on line 6, insert a semicolon. And specifying procedures for calling. And I don't there might be a different word for that, for calling and conducting the election or the elections. But I don't want to get into all the details.
Okay to me. Mr. Gessler?
I think calling works, and maybe just say calling and conducting an election, perhaps rather than the elections.
Okay. Take the S off and then...
But I'm looking at call, but I think, you know, a lot of times in sort of say call the question or call the election.
Seems a little British to me, but I can't think of anything better.
Maybe triggering. Yeah.
I'll move that change.
Second.
Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other changes? Is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action on number 57. The time is 11:31. Let's turn to 58 then. We've found it to be a single subject. We've approved a technical change to the text. I suppose we should start with actually what we drafted for 57 as the staff draft. So if we could start with that, Ceci, then we'll see how that might be amended to become the title for 58.
Thank you.
I mean, I think the difference, I mean, in the staff draft, for 58, there was a clause added to the end that referenced the new subsection 7 that was added to 58 about prohibiting basically the PUC from... taking into account, well, I'm reluctant to use the different words, but referencing the new subsection 7, the staff draft said prohibiting the promotion of eligible energy resources as a consideration in decisions made by the PUC regarding the acquisition of additional generation or energy resources, et cetera. So do we want to include that or something along those lines?
Well, time for discussion. I don't know if we need to include it, but I don't think we can use the word specific anymore. These are sort of by design aiming to capture things that are not specific. It's aiming to capture kind of PUC's discretionary role, as I understand it. I was thinking maybe in the statement of the single subject, this might be a decent place to either just get rid of specific, or you have to use something looser than that. Probably just get rid of it there. And then in line 4, you would say from certain statutory electric resource standards and any associated standards for approval of blah blah blah, taken from that sentence was what I had in mind.
Mr. Gessler,
maybe, and I don't know quite how it would fit in, but maybe something along the lines from specific statutory and associated regulatory standards, maybe a way to capture that. And I do think, actually, I think that the specific, not that I'm wedded to the word specific, but I think it may still apply here just because, you know, the regulatory exemption is really geared to the, you know, to those standards that are listed in statute and the specific exemption itself. So if an exemption, if it's a partial exemption, it's, there are specific standards that the regulators have to go on. But again, you may want to remove the word specific. I'm not wedded to that word, but you may want to say associated regulatory standards or
I kind of
capture that.
I think that's a pretty good suggestion. I don't like specific. I mean, this just is not specific. It's aimed to capture additional kind of general discretionary stuff. I agree with Mr. Gessler to the extent he suggests this is not, me, this is a fairly straightforward effort to make sure that these are, that this exemption is actually effective. It's not the most material. Wouldn't be shocking, I don't think, to a voter that the measure would both let you exempt yourself from the statute and say, you know, you can't backdoor these requirements in through the PUC is not super material. So maybe if we just got rid of specific would be enough. His language about associated regulatory standards would also be okay.
Want to take a run at that?
Well, let's start by removing specific, both on line 2 and line 4. I don't know if we need to add anything back on line 2. I lean towards just leaving it. You could also leave it on line 4.
Or you could, on line 4, add statutory where specific was. Say statutory and associated regulatory electric resource standards. That's probably what I'd prefer to do. Maybe I'll suggest that on line 4, where specific was, write statutory and associated regulatory I like that on line 4. And if everybody's comfortable with line 2, I think I'll move those changes.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further changes to number 58? If not, is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
So moved.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That completes action on number 38. The time is 11:38. 58, and the time is 11:38. Sorry. Let's think about where we are. And I'd like to take a lunch break at some point. Okay, with the members of the board. But I think I would suggest that we do at least one more. We've got related measures here. I don't know that there's a good place to stop necessarily. I guess I would suggest doing one more before, at least before breaking. Is that all right with the board?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Got my cashews.
Okay. Well, let's move then to number 97, 2009-2010, number 97, standards for retail electric service. And if we could hear from proponents first, let's see if there's any questions from the board. Mr. Ramey.
We're going to switch roles now. Edward Ramey representing the proponents of this one. Mr. Golden DuBois is here with me, and due to his superior expertise, not to match Mr. Singer's, I'm glad, I hope you'll stay. Help coach us through any issues we may have with these, but I do represent the proponents. Measure number 97. I'm just going to, due to the time constraints, I'm going to reserve any further comment. If the board has any questions, I'm happy.
Okay.
I think it's fairly short and straightforward in what it does. I guess in anticipating Ms. Eubank's question, a single subject would be to establish a carbon dioxide emission standard. I think it's fairly.
Any questions for proponents about number 97? If not, then let's turn to consideration of whether the measure is a single subject. Anyone wish to testify on whether the measure is a single subject? Yes, sir. You'll identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you. Chris Newman with the law firm Greenberg Traurig on behalf of Tri-State. And respectfully, what we have here today in the form of proposed initiative 97 is a wolf in sheep's clothing. This is nothing more than an effort to legislate an emission standard through the resource planning process at the PUC when those standards are typically done under the authority of the Air Quality Control Commission, where I served for several years, and for good reason. The Air Quality Act is intended to be comprehensive regulation in the state, and to allow emission standards like this one would be to balkanize that regulation and create lots of unintended consequences. For instance, by way of background, at the Air Commission hearings, you frequently hear that reductions in emissions CO2 and NOx actually increase ozone emissions. If you look at, just by way of context, the Air Quality Control Commission statute 257109 expressly provides that the commission has authority to create emission control regulations for carbon oxides, including carbon dioxide. So this is an authority that already rests with the Air Quality Control Commission, and this is an attempt under the guise of a change to the resource planning process at the PUC to modify the authority of the Air Quality Control Commission. I would agree with the sponsor that we have a second subject or multiple subject here because of this effort to limit, as he said, or here, expand the authority of the PUC in areas that don't make sense and that intrude upon the province of the Air Quality Control Commission. In fact, the Supreme Court has, in two memorable decisions, looked at similar facts and reached the same conclusion. In 2007, with Amendment 17, we looked at reorganizing various divisions into a Department of Environmental Conservation and creating at the same time a new standard, a public trust standard. And the Supreme Court held that creating a standard and giving an agency new authority were multiple subjects. Similarly, in 1998, with Initiative 64, the Supreme Court looked at reallocating government authority and control over judicial qualifications from the Judicial Review Commission to the City and County of Denver, and then also creating new standards for judges. And again, the court found that those two efforts, reallocating authority from one agency or commission to another and creating standards, as we're doing here expressly in the title and the language, violated the single subject rule. The court has also several times looked at whether making changes that affect different sections of a statute or the Constitution might be evidence of a single subject problem. And here we would submit we have exactly that case. most notably, we're making changes to Article 25 of the Constitution, which provides that municipally owned utilities are not subject to PUC regulation, and to Article 9.5 of the Utility Code, which speaks to the process and substantive rights of cooperatives who opt out of PUC regulation. And we would submit that in making all these changes to the authority of the Air Commission, the authority of the PUC, the opt-out process and substance, and the Colorado Constitution, which was taken up by the staff notes, we are log-rolling all these subjects and the voters under the guise of a carbon dioxide emission standard that's being inserted in the resource planning and renewable energy standard provisions of the utility code. And so I think just to summarize, we are modifying and changing the opt-out standards for cooperatives. We're making municipal utilities subject to PUC regulation, where by constitution they're otherwise not. We are creating substantive carbon dioxide emissions limits, which are the province of the Air Quality Control Commission. There is no other example of an air emission limit in the utility code. Frankly, there's no other example of an air emission limit in the Air Quality Act itself. They're done by regulation. There are 9 or 10 factors that the commission must consider in setting a standard. They include, is it practical? Is it cost effective and is the cost reasonable? We're changing that entire framework. This would affect a sea change in how we regulate air emissions in Colorado, and we create many unintended consequences. And finally, we are changing and significantly expanding the authority of the PUC to regulate air emissions, a subject it has never taken up before as such, and does not have the expertise that the Air Quality Control Commission and the Air Pollution Control Division have to handle these matters. In and of itself, I think, is best evidence that we've got multiple subjects at play here. I have some comments on language. I imagine you want me to hold those.
Are there any questions for Mr. Newman? Mr. Domenico?
I think, a couple of questions. Is your view of why this gives, I mean, the measure itself, the I don't think mentions the PUC. Is it your view of why it's giving all this new authority to the PUC because of where it's placed in the statutes? I mean, it mentions the commission, but only doesn't give it any power. It just mentions that it applies to associations that have exempted themselves from commission jurisdiction.
Right. Well, by the language they've stricken and added, you create that effect where previously the municipally owned utilities and cooperatives were exempt by constitution had the chance to opt out. Here they're modifying those options, which speak to the PUC's authority. If they opt out, the PUC has no authority, right?
So that leads to my follow-up. Could you explain a little bit more how you view this altering the constitutional structure of who does what, who regulates what?
Right. And so this was an issue raised by staff in the staff memos, and it speaks to Article 25 of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Which speaks to the PUC having power to regulate utilities and says at the end, provided further, nothing herein shall be construed to apply to municipally owned utilities. And so by expressly dealing with municipally owned utilities here and suggesting they are subject to the regulation of the PUC, you're creating a tension and a conflict.
Okay,
seeking
thanks.
To modify the Constitution by statutory initiative.
I think that's all I had.
Any other questions for Mr. Newman? Okay, thank you. Anyone else want to testify on the single subject question for this measure? Go ahead.
Again, I'm Craig Johnson on behalf of the Colorado Association of Municipal Utilities. I don't have much to add to what Tri-State's objections were, except to say that we join in those objections and concerns. I mean, and particularly the concern about how this not only establishes a new standard, but affects a fundamental change in the way environmental policy and air regulation is affected in the state. So we have more concerns with the actual staff recommendations on the ballot title, which we'll address at a later date.
Thank you. Any other testimony before I? Yes, sir. If you'll come forward, please, and give us your testimony.
My name's Ted Orff with Orff and Orff PC. I represent the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. I would endorse everything that Tri-State had to say. There's one further thing, and that we're changing the type of air regulation we do in the state from a health-based standard to an emissions-based standard, and that's a total change.
A total what change?
Total chance of change.
Oh, okay.
And that's another item, should be another issue.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Orff? Thank you. Mr. Singer.
Just briefly, Mr. Hobbs, just to the question you asked about, or actually Mr. Domenico asked about, the significance of where the placement is and whether or not the commission does have new authority to implement some regulations with respect to CO2. Just wanted to make sure that you were aware that 42108 says that the commission shall promulgate such rules as are necessary for the proper administration and enforcement of this title. So I think any kind of new standard created in Title 40, the commission does have authority to implement rules to regulate. So I just wanted to tie those together.
Thank you.
Mr. Ramey, would you like to respond?
I don't really want to respond substantively on some of the issues, particularly the constitutional issue. There's a great deal that was seriously considered. And I would respectfully disagree with that suggestion. But again, that's something that's not before the board today any more than my comment of one of the previous measures regarding First Amendment issues. Everything that was just stated is either a prediction about constitutional implications of this, intended or unintended effects, issues involving different regulatory agencies and whether an effect, intended or unintended, might be upon the regulatory power of another agency vis-a-vis the Public Utilities Commission. Rather than spend a great deal of time on that, and as ignorantly as I could do it, there are other people in the room, Mr. Golden Dubois, who could speak in a lot more detail to this stuff. But I don't think any of that is really relevant. What this measure, at least for the purpose of this panel, what this measure does is what it does. It establishes a carbon dioxide emission standard for particularly specified utilities, period. If there are other implications, the general practice of the courts is to attempt to construe everything in a manner that A, would be constitutional, and B, would consistently construe as many parts of existing statutory material as can be done. And to the extent that that cannot be done, then there are, of course, precepts for determining which standard controls. Again, I don't think that goes to anything this board should be addressing. We can. It will take many, many hours. But I don't think it goes to that. And secondly, I don't think it impacts the single subject. This does one thing. It creates that standard. I think everybody that has spoken concurs.
Questions for Mr. Ramey? Not, then I'll turn to board discussion of the single subject question. Ms. Eubanks?
I think the measure constitutes a single subject, and I would move that the board proceed to set a title.
I'll second that. And I just agree with Mr. Ramey. I think this there may be future effects and constructions and issues that arise in the future, but I think it just prescribes a carbon dioxide emission standard. So I think there's one subject, in my opinion.
I think I generally agree. I agree with, I think, almost everything that Mr. Newman and the other opponents said about what this does. But I think I agree with Mr. Ramey that those don't constitute additional subjects. The only one that I'm a little unsure about is the fact that it does put this in the PUC's jurisdiction, which, as was pointed out, by definition, putting it in Title 40 gives the PUC new jurisdiction to impose this, but I don't think that quite meets up with the cases that were cited to us by Mr. Newman of creating a new kind of regulatory structure and new substantive standards. It just creates a new substantive standard and puts it within one particular regulatory section that already exists. So I agree that it's a single subject, I think.
Okay. Then all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft for number 97, and Ms. Gomez is displaying it on the screen in the room. Mr. Ramey, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
I have, Mr. Hobbs. There are two changes, which I think for accuracy. First, in line 5. Yeah, in line 5, it says no more than 1,100. More accurately, just read no more than an average of 1,000.
Okay.
Accurate. And secondly, 6 kilowatt hour should be megawatt.
Should be what?
Megawatt hour. would make a big difference.
Thank you. Other comments about the staff draft? Yes, sir. And Mr. Newman.
Thank you. Chris Newman again. And these comments would be in the category of completeness, I think, trying to understand exactly what it is we're looking at when we vote on this. The first would be in line two, where we talk about the commission standard. Frequently you hear the debate center around, is it more stringent, less stringent, which is relevant to the authorities that the Air Commission has and presumably the at issue here. We would propose adding commission standard more stringent than the Federal Clean Air Act. And then maybe I should just, you want me to go through my list as short?
Yes, just,
and we can,
yeah, just go ahead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then in line three, I believe, let's see, continuing there, for certain providers of retail electric service, we would propose something along the lines, including municipally owned utilities and cooperative electric associations, exempt from regulation by the Colorado Constitution or Colorado revised statutes, comma, but excluding investor-owned utilities.
Go over that one again. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Sorry. So the
line three.
This is. It's after the comma in line two, retail electric service.
Okay.
And the point is to explain that we're capturing municipals that are exempt by constitution and co-ops that are exempt by the opt-out in the statute, but not the investor-owned utilities. For instance, public service would not be affected by this.
Okay. Any others?
Where we had a similar change earlier. Looks like it's end of four onto the beginning of five. Cooperative Electric Association that has voted to exempt itself. The concept we would offer is whose members or consumers have voted to exempt themselves.
And why consumers? Remind me. Or let me know. What's the significance of consumers?
Well, members, okay, the members of the co-op would vote to exempt under 9.5. And under the related initiatives we're taking up, we're giving the right for consumers to petition to be subject to PUC regulation. Sorry. You're right. I think it should be just members.
Okay.
Kent, do you want? It should just be members. Okay, yeah. And the last thought we had. Is at the end, something along the lines. And granting authority similar to that held by the Colorado Air Quality Control Commission to the Colorado Public Utilities Commission to regulate air emissions limits.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Newman? Go ahead.
One last thing is in the unofficial title. I don't know if you're open to comments there, but
we don't set that or change it. It's just
for reference in this
just
hearing.
Just for reference purposes. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Thank you. Any other testimony concerning the staff draft?
Again, we have a few concerns with the proposed language of the draft, and I don't have a specific language to suggest to you, but my concern is with the overall way that this title is drafted, in that it doesn't really represent to the voters what they're getting if they approve this measure. It doesn't, while it does state that there is a limitation, a new environmental limitation that they would be approving, it doesn't get to the core issue, and that is that the voters of the state as a whole are going to be asked to impose a burden on certain ratepayers and not on others. And I don't think there's anything in this title that would make the voter aware that if you are in an area currently served by an investor-owned utility, that by voting for this, you're imposing a burden on your neighbors who may be served by a co-op or by a municipal. There's nothing that would advise the person reading this that what they're buying is basically discriminatory conduct with respect to certain ratepayers versus others. I also have issues with respect to some of the language that's used in here, and I realize that it comes directly from the language of the initiative itself, but phrases like naturally viable resources and other types of or naturally variable resources, I should say. Other phrasing like that, I think, is not going to have any meaning, and I think is going to be confusing to most of the voters who would be evaluating this. And so we, while I don't have specific language to suggest, we oppose the staff draft as written.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Other testimony on the staff draft? Mr. Golden Dubois.
Thank you. I just wanted to respond. We believe that the title is actually quite clear, that it sets a numerical standard that people will understand very well. And I understand that there's a desire to load this up with some rhetorical devices that make it less simple. But my sense is that what you all have done in your previous on the hearings on the previous initiatives is you have attempted to simplify them as much as possible, and that's certainly what we've attempted to do here. There are a couple of things that I would address here. It doesn't seem to me that naturally variable resources is any more a confusing phrase than is the one in the previous initiative, which was electric. I don't even remember what the words were. Electric. I'll have to look back. Eligible electric resources. So this seems no more confusing to me than any of the others. I guess those are the several things that I would want to say. And we intend specifically for this to apply to a set of utilities. And we believe the standard's quite clear.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Mr. Ramey?
Just one comment. I would second everything Mr. Goldman stated. There was, of all the statements that were just made, there's only one that I think, subject to being corrected by somebody in the room, it was just inaccurate, one of the suggestions. And that is whether, I guess the phrase on line four should be added instead of a cooperative electric association that has voted to exempt itself as distinguished from whose members or whatever have voted to exempt themselves. I think, and I stand to be corrected, that the current statutory structure is that the boards of those utilities would vote. Now, some of the measures before us today may change that, but the current structure, I mean, I think boards do it, so to say that somebody else doesn't, I don't think would be accurate. And if I'm wrong on that.
Any more? Mr. Singer?
The deregulation statute 49.5, I think it's 104, does talk about the members voting to exempt themselves from regulations. So I think that's the purpose of the amendment we've suggested, whose members or consumers have voted to exempt themselves. That's the only point. Not that it's the association as an entity. It's their members who have voted to exempt themselves.
But is it misleading just to refer to the association, the association that has voted to exempt itself? I mean, whether it's done by members or whatever, I don't want to title it as misleading, but I'm not sure that it's really significant to say members. Is it misleading to say association that has voted to exempt itself?
I think it's more precise to say the members or consumers voted. I can't tell you it's wrong to say the association voted to exempt itself. I get your point. I think it's more clear to say that how the process worked was that the members had a vote, as opposed to the board of directors of the association voting to it, which they cannot do.
Okay. Ms. Eubanks.
If I could ask you a question, sorry. Rather than deal with, you know, whether members have voted or boards or whatever, would it be inaccurate just to say, in terms of these municipally owned utilities or cooperative electric associations that are exempt from state regulation, without getting into how they're exempt?
I think that would work. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. If there's no other testimony, then I'm going to turn it over to board discussion. Any discussion about the staff drafts? Staff draft, Ms. Eubanks.
Although I'll probably defer to the proponents, it seems that adoption of a standard, a mission standard, I mean, really it's the imposition of a standard, and I think that might be a more accurate term to use, so that it would be imposition of a carbon dioxide emission standard on certain providers of retail electric service. But I don't know if Mr. Ramey has any reaction to that change.
I'm trying to think of another word. I take your point. Imposition has connotations to it.
Can we just get rid of the whole concept?
It's mandatory.
Can we just, I mean,
mandate might be a better verb. Concerning the mandate of a carbon dioxide standard, probably better. Imposition makes me think of inquisitions and things.
Okay.
I just don't like the word, but I do take it.
I mean, adoption doesn't sound quite.
Adoption sounds.
Yeah.
But
the rest of this.
Mandates, or the mandating sounds okay. Mandate of.
And the remainder of the staff draft requires. A certain standard. I mean, I think I'm wondering if where Mr. Domenico may be going, can we just eliminate some words here? Maybe we don't have to say imposition or anything. The subject could be the standard, and then after the in connection therewith, what follows may be sufficient. Would you be okay to that?
Two initial comments that I made, which accuracy of the text. Yes, I think that would.
I'm fine with that, too. So if we want to just take out the adoption of,
yeah,
to strike that language?
That's what I was going to suggest.
So it would read, concerning a carbon dioxide emission standard.
Providers, yes. I would move that change.
I'll second that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
I was going to also suggest changing standard to limit, although I'm not 100% convinced of that. I mean, it is a limit. A standard seems more like kind of just This is what it should sort of be like, as opposed to a hard number.
It makes sense to me. I think that's a little more helpful to the reader.
Well, the measure refers to standard, the terminology, yeah. But I agree, you are limiting.
I'd be okay with that, if that's offered as a motion.
Yeah, I'll move then that on line 2, the word standard be changed to limit.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other changes to the staff draft? Ms. Eubanks?
I don't really like the phrase as it's currently written, the first phrase that appears after in connection therewith. It reads very, it's very difficult for me to read. I mean, you're talking about a provider that has voted, shall omit no more. It just doesn't read very well to me.
No.
Plus, it doesn't mention the fact that, in terms of Well, and so what I would suggest is perhaps going the direction of more along the lines of requiring each municipally owned utility or cooperative electric association that provides retail electric service and that is exempt from regulation, and then get into it and with the date at the end, with the limit, rather than at the beginning. But if you guys are okay with it, I just find that phrase very difficult.
But is it mostly because of the date that interrupts the thought at the beginning, or?
It's
more than that?
It's the date and then how you're describing the provider of the retail electric service. I mean, you've got various conditions. You know, it has to be either a municipally owned utility or a cooperative electric association. It has to be exempted from regulation. I mean, there's just a lot of information there that is sort of dumped in there. And whether it would be more useful to voters to know that it's requiring the municipally owned utility or a municipally owned utility or cooperative electric association that is a provider of retail service and that is exempt from regulation to emit no more than I, and you know, it just could be me.
Okay.
If you guys are fine with it.
No, I think I agree with you. I've been trying to, I think it's easy to move the date to the end, which helps. It's difficult for me to come up with a good way to I was considering a way to move the number, the actual limit, up to the beginning, but I'm struggling to find a way to move that to before the description of who it applies to. I mean, the simple way would be, I mean, you could get your mandating or imposing language here, I think works better than it would have above, imposing a limit of no more than an average of 1,100 pounds of carbon dioxide per megawatt hour of generation on each provider of retail electric service, et cetera, et cetera. And then that would be the only way I can think of to move the number, the limit, to the beginning. Otherwise, I think if you just move the date, it helps, and that may be the easiest thing to do.
And I would probably be fine with that. I mean, maybe it solves it by if you put an and after association so it's clear that it's the provider that is either the municipally owned or cooperative and that has voted to exempt itself, or I'd just say is exempt because I don't think it's that important of how they got exempted, just that they are exempt from regulation. But if to put the limit up front, if you're willing to try that, I'm fine with that too. Start with, should we just go ahead and strike the date language? Okay. So after requiring, strike that by January 1, 2025. I take that, yes. And then on line 5, I would strike that has voted to strike the language that has voted to just strike through that.
Strike that phrase that has voted to.
Yeah. And then strike. Itself.
Can I ask, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Can I ask,
I think maybe this is a question for the representative from Tri-States, but I thought we learned before Tri-States is wholesale. So does this apply to Tri-States? I'm just curious if we can get rid of the provider of retail electric service language and just say requiring each municipally owned utility or cooperative electric association. That's all. And I just don't know. Anybody who's can help.
If you, okay, if you'll identify yourself and sign in later.
Good morning. My name's Tom Doherty of the law firm Rothgerber Johnson & Lyons, Tri-States Council. What you are proposing, Mr. Domenico, would be a fundamental change in the measure as proposed by the proponents. The fact that it includes right now certain providers of retail electric service is a fundamental aspect of this. Tri-State is not a provider of retail service. So if you were to strike that, you would be expanding what it is that has been proposed or set forth by the proponents. So maybe another way to answer your question is no, as drafted, this does not capture Tri-State and would not apply.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's not do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that's very helpful, obviously.
Can I ask another question, though?
Yes, Ms. Eubanks.
Well, Mr. Domenico's question made me, looking back at the language of the measure itself, when it talks about the electric generation facilities for providers, I assume we're talking power plants here. I mean, so it's where they're generated, and I don't know, I assume that maybe retail electric service providers buy their energy from somebody else. So whether it's really the emission standard is on the generator of the power and not to the provider of retail service, it's the generator of the energy that then the provider provides, however they do that. So I'm not sure we're quite right on our description, and I don't have.
I think you've hit on the exact same point. If the intent was to go to wherever the power comes from for those retail electric service providers, the measure as proposed does not do that. And if you were to make that change, Tri-State believes you would be making a fundamental change in what it is that the advocate, that the proponents have put forth.
And maybe I can ask my question of Mr. Ramey. Okay. It's the same question. The measure's going after the generation facilities, not, I mean, it's whoever's generating the energy that then these specific providers acquire that energy from. Am I correct?
So the whoever provides the retail service has to ensure that the energy that they buy meets this standard. So if they buy it on the open market, if they have contracts for it, whatever it is, they have to meet this standard.
Well, the facilities that generate the energy have to meet the standard, right?
Correct.
Okay. But it's only the generation facilities that provide energy to these specific types of retail providers?
Correct.
Okay.
I think the language is correct as it stands, what I would say.
Well, I disagree. I think perhaps because providers of retail service aren't necessarily the generators of the energy provided, that we need to recognize that it's for the generation facilities, not the provider.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't mind coming to the, yes, but please come to the mic.
I just want to make sure that I'm following the discussion here, because certain municipals buy their electricity from out of state. For example, a Municipal Energy Agency of Nebraska has generation facilities in several states. We import electricity into Colorado. And if I heard, what this would do is impose a burden on those municipalities that are buying electricity to ensure that the facilities where that electricity is generated, whether they're in-state or out-of-state, meet this requirement. If that is, in fact, the true intent of the statute, it gives a lot of substantive problems, but it also raises serious questions for the ballot title, accurately stating and representing what this measure is all about.
Well, I think that's right. I think I that is the way it seems to actually read. If you're a retail, if you're covered by this, you have to ensure that your electric generation facilities, which I would think would be these, include certain out-of-state ones, meet this standard, or you can't buy from them, or I don't know. I mean, there's no enforcement mechanism here, so you pay a fine or whatever the PUC comes up with, I guess. But I agree with you. We have to capture that in here, and I think that's where Ms. Eubanks was headed.
And I think we may need to capture it both in the statement of single subject, as well as in the details, because right
that
now
that I'm not sure about. I'm not sure there's anything wrong with the single subject.
Well, I don't know if, and this is just because I don't deal with this area of the law, but it seems to me that some generation facilities may not be providers of retail electric service.
Ms. Eubanks, can I insert?
I'm sure that's true.
Be my guess.
I may be stepping back about this. One of our suggestions, remember, was to insert the word average. But that relates a little bit to what we're talking about here, is that covered providers by this measure, average, does not mean that. Average.
So the average is an aggregate average of all of their facilities.
I'm not sure that answers all the questions.
And but it's helpful.
And that's from the text.
Don't go away.
I've been here before when you've had that look.
I know. I apologize. So if I understand correctly, it seems to me that the limit... So you're saying that the limit is actually on the retail service providers in ensuring that in purchasing the energy from whoever is generating the energy, that from all the various generators they purchase from, that the carbon dioxide emissions don't exceed, on average, this amount. Is that what you're telling me?
The one thing I would say is not from each facility. So the on average is the important
concept
there. As
an aggregate.
Absolutely.
But it's the duty of the municipally owned utility or cooperative electric association to ensure that from whoever they purchase from, or they generate themselves, on average, this limitation isn't exceeded.
Correct.
I think that is the effect.
Can I offer a suggestion just to see if, so we can figure out where I'm wrong? If after in connection therewith it said something like imposing a limit of 1,100 megawatt, 1,100 pounds of carbon dioxide per megawatt hour on the average emissions of the electric generation facilities for each provider that is a municipally owned utility or cooperative electric association by, and then put in the date.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to say that again.
Well, the main idea was now it may actually make sense to put the number first, I think. And so either imposing a limit or saying mandating that the average emissions of the electric generation facilities of, and then of a each provider of retail electric service, et cetera, be no more than 1,100 pounds per megawatt hour.
Mr. Domenico, if I may interject, the only difficulty where you went, it sounded like we were imposing a limit on generators with regard to, across the board with regard to a generator, with regard to power not
right
purchased in Colorado, but otherwise, I think you're heading.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Mandating that the average emissions of the electric generation facilities of these covered utilities . What about imposing a limit of 100 pounds on the average emissions of the electronic generation facilities? Imposing a limit, the average emissions, the electronic generation facilities of 1,100 pounds. Can I suggest writing that down? Am I close enough that we should write that down, or is it just way off base?
I think it's worth putting up there.
All right. So my suggestion then is, after in connection therewith, let's just write imposing a limit on the average emissions of the electric generation facilities or, and then delete requiring, and then go to regulation, after regulation, strike shall emit, and put of, insert of, and the other, I think that's where I was headed. The other option would be to take the of clause that's down there and put it after after average emissions, put all the language of no more than 1,100 pounds of carbon dioxide per kilowatt hour of generation could come after average emissions, just because it's a long ways between the limit as it is now. Put it there.
Does it go there or after limit? A limit of?
Yeah, a limit of, sorry. And then
of no more. Of. And then I believe that it needs to be megawatt hour instead
yes.
of kilowatt hour. Is that
yes.
correct? Okay.
And I don't know if we write out 1,100.
Don't mind numerals.
Yes.
The before electric generation facilities on line 5.
I have a hand raised.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Golden Dubois.
I just wanted to make a distinction. We used the word standard before. And you use the word limit here. And I actually think that the word limit confuses the word average. That's why you use standard, because it's referring to an average as opposed to a hard defined limit on any one source. And that may be a little bit confusing there as well, I think. So.
Yeah, I understand. I can see that comment. The problem is, seems to me that if someone goes over 1,100 average, that they're subject to whatever the penalty is for violating this. But I do understand that comment, and it's very important. It would have been a real problem had we not added in the word average, I think was important. I think it's, to the extent it's a problem, it's mitigated or clarified. So I would still sort of like limit, but I'm not going to fight too hard for it if the rest of the board wants to go back.
I think it's okay.
Can I ask a question? Why doesn't this apply to Excel? Why is this limited to these types of utilities?
There are several reasons. First, that the regulated utilities already meet different standards for what it is they're doing. So, for example, they have a higher percentage of renewable energy generation that they're already meeting. And they've also agreed to phase out several coal-fired power plants in the Front Range area. And then thirdly, they have agreed to a standard for new generation sources as well. So one could make the argument that the regulated utilities are already meeting standards that are not the same as this, but that are similar in a different way. And these utilities that are included here do not.
Okay. Because I was just trying to figure out how important – you know, one suggestion was to try to clarify who it applies to and who it doesn't, and I was trying to figure out how important that is. I think I'm okay with it as it is.
Any further comment on that change?
I would just make my pitch again, that word. I'm wondering if establishing. Posing just has a connotation.
Establishing a limit?
Establishing a limit? I mean, I'm not sure what difference, but it's okay with me.
us, there's no difference.
Okay. Establishing. Yeah.
Establishing and imposing.
Okay. So, suggestion then is establishing a limit of no more than 1,100 pounds of carbon dioxide per megawatt hour of generation on the average emission of electric generation facilities for each provider of retail electric service that is a municipally owned utility or a cooperative electric association exempt from regulation. We don't have the date in there yet, do we? Where do we put that?
After electric generation facilities on line 5. By January 1st, 2025.
Where the cursor is?
Yes.
Go ahead. Let's see what it looks like. I don't know. It just looks kind of awkward there to me. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, then put it up after establishing.
I'm sort of back to thinking it goes to the beginning again.
We're entitled to change our minds.
Well, the if you could put it after limit on line 3.
Mm-hmm.
Be fine, too.
So let's move it to after limit on line 3. Establishing a limit by January 1, 2025.
The other thing you could do is have it give it its own little clause. So the establishing the limit is one clause, and then the date that it goes into effect is another clause. It really bothers you up there.
I mean, my preference actually is to put it right after establishing, I guess, but I don't feel strongly about it.
Separate clause or wherever, but
it's a limit of no more than 1,100. I hate to sort of interrupt
that part.
Let's move it.
Move it.
At least look. Let's move it. Let's look at it.
Move. Okay, so establishing by January 1, 2020.
Shopping.
Yeah.
See if you like the looks.
Yeah. That is establishing by, okay, there. That's my preference, but
I like that better.
Well, if we're there, I'm going to go ahead and move the changes that we've discussed.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
I don't think that we need to have the details about the types of electric generation facilities that are exempt from the limit, although I do think it is important to note that there are certain facilities that are exempt. So I would suggest striking the remaining language of the staff draft starting on line 9 through the period and substitute and exempts certain electric generation facilities from the limit.
And exempting?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. And exempting or ING.
It's fine to me.
I would move that change.
Second. Is there a comma before the and or something before the and somewhere?
Be a semi or yeah, comma or semicolon after regulation. On line 7.
Preference, semicolon or comma?
Commas.
After regulation on line 7.
Yeah, right there, comma. Okay, so that's your comma. That's your motion, I think? Or did
that's
we,
my motion.
I'll second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Gomez is displaying the title as it would read. Are there any other changes? Is there a motion to adopt this staff draft as amended?
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. No. That motion. That motion carries 3-0. I think it's time for a break. It's 12:44. When should we come back? We've really got still got a long ways to go on the agenda. 30? 30 minutes? Come back at 1:15. Okay, we'll resume.